Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The Arab revolt against the Turks in World War I was, in the words of T.E. Lawrence, a sideshow of a sideshow. Amidst the slaughter in European trenches, the Western combatants paid scant attention to the Middle Eastern theater. A young English officer, T.E. Lawrence, stood in the middle of that maelstrom and seized control. Scott Anderson's newly released Lawrence in Arabia is a review of the shifting alliances and cross-currents in what most considered a secondary theater of conflict. Based on years of research, the volume provides an overview of the war and how its resolution created the disastrously unstable modern Middle East. Scott Anderson is a former war correspondent and author of novels and nonfiction, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Again, the title of the book, Lawrence in Arabia, War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East. Give us an idea of what brought you to this subject, what brought you to T.E. Lawrence, and to start there.
Well, as a war correspondent, I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East over the past 20, 30 years. And when you get into any kind of a weighty discussion with people in that part of the world, they always trace their problems back to the borders that were cut that were cut at the end of World War I, the way the British and the French divided up the region into their own colonial spheres of influence. And as far as Lawrence, I saw the movie Lawrence of Arabia as a kid. I've always been fascinated by him and realized that he played a very pivotal role in that whole period and what created the modern Middle East. Over the years, I had read a couple of biographies about Lawrence, and it always found him just a fascinating, very enigmatic figure.
When you think of that figure, how much of it did you know going in? Obviously, there is the movie. There has been other writing, but how much did you know going in, and how much was drastically changed through your research?
I didn't know that much, and the interesting thing about Lawrence is that there have been so many books written on him. Dozens, if not scores, of books, and he's always been a very contentious figure in history, with some people saying he was a fraud, he was a self-promoter, other people saying he was Britain's greatest hero of the 20th century. My first task was to sort of wade through and to be able to try to separate what was fact from fiction. And what I discovered, and a lot of it was by going back to primary sources, going back to British government records from World War I, realizing that Lawrence really did do all the things he was credited with doing, and in fact more. So he really was this remarkable figure. I mean, even more remarkable in that when he went to Arabia, he was a 28-year-old Oxford scholar without a single day of military training, and somehow maneuvered himself into a position where he was the battlefield commander for an Arab rebel army.
When you think of how we look at him, because there's many ways to define him as an archaeologist or as this romantic figure, and do you have to define that of who he was or what he was doing as kind of a jumping off point?
I think so, because I think what is interesting is that with Lawrence as a young man, he was fascinated by medieval history. He was obsessed with the King Arthur's court tales. And I think when he went off to Arabia, it was this idea of being a kind of modern-day knight errant. And what happened to him there was because he was a military intelligence officer, and he knew what the British were planning at the end of the war, that the British and the French were going to carve up the region between themselves, at the same time that the British are telling the Arab rebels, we're going to give you independence. And the longer that Lawrence was in the field and recruiting Arabs to fight and to die alongside him, the more he became morally conflicted by his role there, to the point where I really feel he became this kind of Shakespearean tragic figure of a man who, with divided loyalties, clearly, as the war went on, as the longer he spent in Arabia, felt more and more tortured by his role. He called himself a charlatan and a fraud, and kept trying to live up to the promises that had been made to the Arabs.
I want to parse out some of the terms in the subtitle of the book, but the imperial folly of it all. This was something that went over a very long period of time.
That's right, and I think the imperial folly. It's hard to conceive of now, but what World War I was really about was the European imperial powers not just trying to maintain their empires as they existed. They imagined that whoever won this war, there was going to be another whole sweep of empire building afterwards. And instead, World War I turned out to be the graveyard of empires. But just prior, in the 30 years prior to World War I, you'd had the so-called scramble for Africa, where in about a 30-year period, all the European powers conquered and colonized virtually the entire African continent. So that was the true renaissance of empire. And when they looked around and saw what was next, you know, what was left on the world map, it really was the Middle East. The Ottoman Empire was slowly falling apart, and so everybody started looking at the Middle East as the next great frontier.
And that next great frontier, I mean, how soon did it come that this was going to be troublesome and a conflict?
It started almost immediately.
Right.
The World War I ended at the end of 1918. The Paris Peace Conference was in early 1919. And by the end of 1919, Britain and France, and to a lesser extent Italy, had carved up the Middle East between themselves, and either through direct control or so-called indirect control, spheres of influence. And by 1920, almost the entire region was aflame. There was a civil war in Iraq, which the British had grabbed. There was huge tension in throughout Syria that the French had grabbed, and also huge problems in Egypt that was under British control.
As you mentioned, I mean, we talk about the making of the modern Middle East. So how much of what we have now is a direct result and a cultural, a beginning of a cultural shift that is allowed and is accepted today?
Yeah, great question. I think what we're seeing today, and it started a few years ago with the so-called Arab revolts that are now spreading everywhere, I think what we're seeing is the final unraveling of these artificial boundaries that were created at the end of World War I. Boundaries created for the advantage of the European powers and without any regard to different ethnic and religious groups that were being thrown together in these artificial nations. So I think you're starting to see all that ending now.
And so are we at the cusp of something new?
I think I believe we're at something very new. I think we're going into a long period of chaos. And I think that the map of the Middle East is going to look very different 15, 20 years from now than it looks today. And you're already seeing it. Yeah, you're seeing it in Iraq and in Libya already. Iraq is now and is going to be increasingly essentially three countries. It's going to be become a Sunni Iraq, a Shia Iraq, and a Kurdish Iraq, with very little connection between the three. And Libya likewise. Libya was there's two very distinct cultures in Western Libya and in Eastern Libya, and already what you're seeing is a division existing there, and two sort of rival governments being set up.
And even though it's a new on the cusp of something new, it seems as though, at least for our part of the United States' part, war, deceit, and imperial folly will be very much a part of that chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're an optimist, and it's hard to be an optimist about that region of the world, I think looking long term, I mean, the one silver lining to what's happening in Egypt today. For the first time, the so-called street, the Arab street, the empowered in a way they've never been before. For a century, they've either been under colonial puppet kings or extremely repressive military regimes, and that's all falling apart now. But the short term is that there's going to be a long period of chaos. You're going to see progress in some countries moving more towards democracy. In other words, you're probably in other countries. I think you're going to see a fall back into religious extremism, state-sponsored terrorism. It's going to be a very tumultuous time. And incidentally, has very little now to do with the Israel-Palestine question. What's happened now has far surpassed that.
So what we read in the book, what do you think is important as a takeaway from the story about T.E. Lawrence that can serve us well in the future?
It's funny. Lawrence was so prescient about so many of the problems that were coming in the Middle East because of the colonial designs of the Europeans. He predicted disaster coming in Iraq. He predicted disaster coming if there was a Jewish state in Palestine. I think that what Lawrence was always saying was you need to listen to the local people, and they have to rule themselves. They have to govern themselves. The Middle East is not it's not Africa. It's not other parts of the world. And the more outsiders that try to meddle with that part of the world, the more sorrow for all concerned.
The name of the book is Lawrence in Arabia, War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East. The book is published by Doubleday. Scott Anderson, a pleasure. I thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Joe. My pleasure.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Lawrence in Arabia, it is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.